Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 449 on the podcast today. Tony Mannini, Director, Chief Executive Officer and Deputy Chairman of Asia Met Resources, ticker ARS. We discussed the recent preliminary economic assessment of its BKM asset in Indonesia. Now, this exceeded expectations, but there's been a sell-off in the share since, and it's the old cliche, you know, buy on rumour, sell on news. And I think I'm a holder of this company, you know, for interest of transparency, and I genuinely think this right now, or the drop in price in the last 2 days, is an opportunity, and I say this to Tony as we speak, but this asset, and not only this one, the other two assets they have the potential to make this a big company. And Tony's done it before. And there are companies on AIM that are exploration companies. They raise money, they explore, they raise money, they explore. This now is moving on to a development company. And then that will go into production. And like I said, he's got a track record of doing this before. And so it's not new to him. But trouble is, AIM, you have the right to be cynical on AIM, because at a lot of companies, all they do is raise and explore. This, I believe, is not one of those companies. And it will go on to be, hopefully, a mid-tier producer. That's what I believe. Do your own research on this. But I believe this. Also on the podcast, small-cap commentator Doc Holliday talks about many stocks, including Coves and Ariane Silver. Plus, I have today's stock with potential. We're giving this a rest for a while, but I have quite a few submissions come in. And today, it's Alexander Mining. Also, I dedicate this podcast to, in fact, let's see over the name here. It's New What Could, yeah. Give me a cracking review on iTunes, a 5-star rating. That means I now have 127 5-star ratings. And do me a favor, if you find this podcast any help whatsoever, please go to iTunes, click the link here at voxmarkets.co.uk/blog on one of the blogs there. Leave a review and I'll read your review out. And that's much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Director, Chief Executive Officer and Deputy Chairman of Asia Met Resources, that's ARS, Tony Mannini. Thanks for coming back on, Tony.
Hey, great to be here, Justin. Really pleased that you've got me back on a day or two after we've released the PEA.
Yeah, now something really odd happened, because I mentioned a while back that I said, when we talked about the PEA coming up, you mentioned some general figures, and I said after that with a couple of friends on the podcast, I don't think you're over-egging the pudding here. And the PEA came out, and it exceeded expectations. And it's odd how the share price went down on that, but I think, you know, I saw that as an opportunity. I bought some more, because it's a long-term story here. And I think, you know, patience is needed sometimes, and some of the best investors, like Warren Buffett, said he sits around, waits for weakness in share price, and buys some more. That's why he outperformed the market. Did you think that was a bit odd, the share price dropping there?
Oh, very much so, Justin. You know, as I've said to you previously, I thought that, you know, our share price and the company more broadly was fundamentally very undervalued. Here we've delivered a PEA on the BKM deposit, which I think knocks it out of the park on every metric. You know, we're at 25,000 tons. We previously said that, you know, we would be looking at 15 to 20,000 tons. We've got an NPV that's over $200 million at a very, you know, high discount rate of 10%. We've got very high internal rate of return at 40%. You know, large gross revenue, $1.3 billion. Importantly, very low cash operating costs at $1.28 per pound for life of mine. And the capital cost at $164 million sounds a big number, but, you know, it's a very low capital intensity project at It's around $6,500 per tonne of annual capacity. If you compare that to projects that have been built in recent times, they're in the range of $20,000 to $25,000 per tonne of capacity. And M&A transactions, recent M&A transactions in copper have been around the $15,000 to $17,000 per tonne. So very low capital intensity project, short payback period for a copper project of this scale, around 2 years, very robust resource base, 8-year life, and the potential to continue to grow the resource, you know, at those nearby prospects. So, as I said, I think we've knocked it out of the park on every front. Yet, and I believe that we're sort of fundamentally undervalued, and hence I think you're very wise in seeing this as a great opportunity to increase your investment.
Yeah, well, it's very odd. This is just one asset that you have. I mean, the other asset you have, Bouton, is a lot larger than this one. And like you said, there's opportunity to expand this resource and make it, you know, bigger, essentially. And yet, you know, the gross revenue from this is $1.3 billion. And yet, market cap is $17 million. And people are selling. I'm thinking, are you insane? But so just explain for people here at the moment. So you say this chance... you know, high potential prospects at BKS, BKW, and BKZ. So at the moment, you know, this PEA is for BKM, the one sort of resource. Just explain how this can be, you know, there are prospects either side, because I don't think people have read that, have they, really?
No, probably not. But if, you know, people have a look at our presentation, which is on the website, they'll see the BKM deposit. The BKM itself, Justin, is still open in some areas on the peripheries, and it's also still open at depth. So we've got, you know, we believe that we can continue to grow that resource in BKM itself. But within 500 metres of BKM to the south and 500 metres to the west, we have two targets, which are obviously BKM south and west, and those... The soil geochemical anomaly, the copper in the soil there, is of the same order of magnitude in terms of its intensity and the size as BKM itself. We've put some holes into BK South just at the end of the last program, and we got some excellent results. Only five holes, each of those holes had copper in it, and the intersections, you know, we had 10 metres of 2.5% copper, including 2 metres of 7.5% copper from within 20 metres of the surface. So we're seeing the exact same patterns in the south. The west hasn't even been touched yet. There's been no drilling in it. So we're very confident that we know we can expand resource base in the immediate vicinity of BKM and extend this mine life from 8 years out to... you know, another at sort of the 10 to 15 year time horizon. So a lot more to come on that front, yeah.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I'm not so worried, like I said, about the share price drop, because it provided opportunity for me, because I was quite gutted. I didn't buy more shares at a lower level. So, you know, it is opportunity. But if people sort of, you know, need to know that, I mean, thing is, I think the share price dropped for two reasons. One is because... Like you know, the old cliche, buy on rumour, sell on news. Now, the news is out, the good news, it exceeded expectations, but people are thinking now, okay, so what's next? So, news-wise, what is next, Tony?
Yeah, look, I guess let's sort of run through the plan from here on, Justin. Mm. Okay, we've got the PEA out, but, you know, this is really, I guess, the start of the development path, if you like, because if you take the company before, and I think this is an important thing to point out to your listeners, is that AsiaMet and its predecessor, Kalimantan Gold, were always viewed as purely an explorer. So, small junior exploration company doing work, putting out exploration results. That's fundamentally changed now with the PEA coming out. So we've established resources, in-situ resources. We've got a PEA on it. We've got financials around that, very strong financials. And the company going forward really needs to be viewed as a development company. So what are we going to do from here? We're actually going to do a number of things. Obviously, as we've just discussed, you know, I still think our company is very, very mispriced and the stock very undervalued for what we've got and where we are. So we're not looking or planning to raise, you know, a large amount of capital anytime soon. Why would we do that when we believe that we're fundamentally undervalued? So what we're looking to do is really protect the capital structure as best we can and move the project forward while increasing the share price. So, I mean, the share price has tripled from the bottom so far, so it's a pretty good start. But we've still got a long way to go. So, you know, if you look at our presentation, which I'm sure you've seen, that's on the website, you'll see there's a value curve there. And we are moving up that value curve as predicted, and we'll continue to do so. It's been done many times before, and there's nothing more certain that if we continue to develop into our milestones and objectives, that we will move up there and our share price will move accordingly. So that said, you know, we're still relatively early in the journey. The markets are still weak, but we'll continue to undertake long lead time work programs that need to happen irrespective of what the project is that we end up building. So we're looking at stage 3 heat leach metallurgical test work. We're looking at further drilling to increase the confidence of the resources that are currently in BKM so that they can be converted into reserves for the feasibility study. We're looking at further well-targeted exploration to grow that resource base and particularly looking for more high grade. Obviously, you know, the high grade translates into opportunities for stronger cash flows early in mine life when you're paying back the project. We'll then look at, you know, various scenarios related to all of that, looking at what optimising the project to take forward, and also at the same time working with potential investors, partners, product buyers and funders who are interested in copper, Indonesia and AsiaMet generally to really fully define and secure a path to take the project forward. So, you know, that's what we're looking to do, Justin. It's an approach which is minimise dilution, get the work done, get the value recognised in our share price, bring in partners to do some of the heavy lifting on the funding and the spend, and then we'll look to, you know, push the project into and through feasibility study into development, you know, over the next couple of years. And, you know, one of the questions that I've been asked about the PEA is, well, why are you using $3.25 a pound when today's price is $2.20? And there's a very, very good reason for that. So number one is we've gone to an independent third-party, globally recognised firm called Wood Mackenzie who analyses the copper market. We've taken their copper forecast numbers from 2019 through to 2025, which is the last forecast they have. We've averaged those numbers and used that in the PEA, and that's $3.25. I talked about M&A transactions, I talked about project builds. If you look at all those transactions are being done on $3.25 copper basis. These are some of the biggest players in the world, Sumitomo, Antofagasta, these types of companies. So, you know, there's forecast to be a structural deficit in the market from about 2018 onwards. And consequently, you know, a substantial sort of lift in copper price. So what we've done here, I think, is a conservative approach to use an average price over a period of time when we believe that the BKM project will be brought into production. So fundamentally, I think, you know, in a very strong spot. We've got a very clearly defined path here, and that's what we'll continue to work on.
Yeah, it's funny. When we're at the bottom of a cycle, it's hard for people to envisage the price going higher. But you know, you've said all along, and you know, experts in the copper field have said, we will be in deficit when you are producing. And another good point, well, two good points, is that I know a couple of investors who were familiar with it was Kalimantan Gold, And they said that is an exploration company. They'll never get the stuff out of the ground. And yet, obviously, you've taken over now and you've gone from exploration now to starting to develop. And so that's a very interesting development in your story. But another point you just raised there, which I think is reason why the share price came off a bit, is that the news was out and then people saw the cost there. And they're worried about, you know, dilution of the share price and placings, etc. And like, you're a shareholder, so I don't imagine you want that to happen. So, you know, can you give a little clarity on going forward, the funding? And it hasn't stopped you in the past, of course, because if anyone knows your record, they know you've gone from, a $3 million company to a $6 billion company. So I think people need to, you know, invest in a bit of calming down on that front. So can you give that for the reassurance, Tony?
Yeah, look, no problems, Justin. As you say, look, you know, I'm probably the largest individual shareholder in the company. So, you know, I have, in my interests, are very, very perfectly aligned with those of all the other shareholders. As I mentioned, you know, we're not planning on raising a large amount of capital today or anytime soon. You know, why would we do that with the stock price where it is and a company valuation where it is, as opposed to what I fundamentally believe the intrinsic value should be? So, how do we take it forward while actually looking after the capital structure and minimising that dilution? So, as I said, we'll use what I call a creep up on it approach. So, we are doing the longer lead time items now, minimising the expenditure, but still getting the work done. And as we get value recognition, then we can look at sort of taking on, I guess, the bigger items that need to be completed as part of the feasibility work. How are we going to fund that? So we've got a number of things, and I've alluded to these in the past, and I can't be too specific, but, you know, I'm hoping that I can actually give you some clarity and some surprise around some of these things very shortly. But we are working on two or three things at the present time which have a very good chance of coming to fruition quite soon, which will bring sufficient money into the company to do the things that I've just alluded to for the next 12 months. So we're looking at corporate initiatives to bring a bit of funding into the company, which will minimise the dilution, which will get the work done, we'll get that news out into the marketplace. We're looking for the broader copper market and the broader equities market for commodities to improve over the next 12, 18 months, get that lift in the valuation of our stock price, look to partnering with people. We've got a number of people interested who've been waiting for the PEA. You've heard me say that before. I've said it a number of times. We can now go to those people. In fact, I'm heading off to Indonesia on Monday to talk to a block of those people who are local Indonesian investors. I've got planned for late in the month, actually probably the first week of May, a trip to talk to a group of people who've expressed interest up in China. And then we have our own investor base, which is, you know, high net worth, sophisticated investors who, you know, have supported me this far and will continue to support. So between that block, there's potential for investment at project level, there's potential for investment at corporate level. But the thing that I want to make very clear is where I started this conversation is that we are not planning to do a large raising and diluting shareholders at this time. I fundamentally believe the company is undervalued. We'll take a creep up approach on it. I'm not saying we don't need capital. Of course we need capital. We're developing projects. But we're looking to do it in a way that minimises dilution when we truly believe that we're fundamentally undervalued, both in share price, market cap, value of the projects, timing in the cycle, etc. So, you know, we'll look to add value over time, and then we'll increase the momentum once we get some of the value recognised and we're further up that growth curve that I referred to earlier. Does that answer the question, Justin?
Yeah. Do you know what? It does. And I think the issue is, especially on AIM and over the last couple of years, because of, you know, small junior sort of commodity companies, resource companies, have struggled to raise money, and they've basically, you know, rinsed shareholders. So I think a lot of shareholders who invest predominantly on AIM are cynical, and they don't believe the story. Like one of the tweets I got, I tweeted out the PEA on Twitter yesterday, and straight away someone said, how are they going to fund this, you know? And instantly suspicious. And I thought, Jason, don't overly worry about that too much. You know, try and believe the story a bit. And that's the problem people have. They've been rinsed before, you know, and when a genuine company comes along, you know, with the ambition to do something great, they don't sort of believe it and don't buy into it. And they're so worried about, you know, having their shares diluted. So I think that's just the issue. And it's hard to get that across to people that you have an ambition here to build us into a lot bigger company. And yet they're a bit cynical. That's all it is. And I think it's a good thing to say. You know, like I said, it's an opportunity right now. Like I thought, I'm happy with it coming back, the share price at the moment, because I can snap up some more at the lower level and bring my average down. So I'm happy with that. But, you know, I suppose, so all you need to do, Tony, is what is your ultimate ambition for, you know, Asia Met Resources?
Yeah, Justin, just before I go on to that, I just want to just make one quick point in reference to what you just mentioned. And that is that just, I think, two things. So one is, you know, have a look at what's happened with Asia Met to date since I've been involved. I've been involved for around, I think it's 16 months now. We did our first placing at 1.2. Small placing 1.2, small placing 1.4, stock price is now 3. So, you know, each of those placings has been done at market. They haven't been done at heavy discount to market. They've been done at market. And now anyone who invested at that time, you know, has 2 to 3 times return on their money. So that's pretty good in a very difficult market against the backdrop of the broader AIM market where there's heavy discounts and small amounts of money being raised. So that's point number one. Point number two, go back, have a look at my track record, have a look at the track record of taking Oxiana, being involved in taking Oxiana from, you know, 3 million market cap to 8 billion market cap. I heard all the exact same things being said when Oxiana was 3 million market cap, when it was 5 million market cap, when it was 10 million market cap. All the same things. So, you know, we, coming back to your last point, we're on a journey here to build a serious copper and gold company, get BKM up into production, recognising that right now the market's weak, minimising the dilution for existing shareholders, a creep-up on approach. When we get to the point where we get the value recognised, we can then push the project hard through the feasibility into development. Then we've got very strong cash flows. You see the numbers coming out of the PEA. You know, very, very strong fundamentals in the project. We can then utilise those cash flows to continue growing the business. And sitting behind BKM, the first project that we've talked about is, you know, we have other assets, including Bootong, which are many times bigger in scale than BKM itself. So we've got the asset base sitting there. We'll utilise partners. We'll utilise our own cash flows. And we'll grow a serious business over the next sort of 5-year, 8-year horizon. But, you know, the first thing is BKM. Let's get the work done in it. Let's get it up, running, into production, generating cash at a time when the copper market is forecast to be in structural deficit and the copper price strong. It's the perfect timing to be actually developing projects now. So, you know, you're actually supplying the market when the prices are rising rather than supplying into the market when, you know, this at cyclical lows. So, you know, it's about all of those things, Justin. I think, people look into that. They're patient investors. They're looking for an investment that they can follow, watch it grow, and grow very substantially over a period of time. Then AsiaMet's one they should be looking at.
Yeah, do you know what, Tony? I think you've covered a lot of good stuff there, and I think genuinely, in about a year's time, we will look back on this time now and thinking, I wish, like I did actually, I wish I'd bought more lower down. And I think that will be the case in about a year's time when people, the first PEA came out and we thought, why didn't I buy on that weakness? I was insane to think it was even anywhere near, overvalued. So I just think people, it's an opportunity for people right now to actually, do your own research on yourself there and what's going on. And hopefully then you can hold for the long term and make some substantial gains on your investment. But Tony, lovely to speak to you. And I'm quite looking forward to that surprise you alluded to earlier. But hopefully speak soon, Tony.
No worries. Thanks very much, Justin. Appreciate it. And I look forward to delivering on those surprises before too long.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
Joining me on the podcast right now is small cap aficionado Doc Holliday. You all right, fella?
Hey, mate. You okay? How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm quite happy to see yesterday's trading update by a company I know we both own, which is Coovs. And they mentioned that they've now turned over $10 million in the last year. Gone well, hasn't it?
It's gone very well, yeah. The company seems to be on track with its financing and they seem to be making good progress with the business.
Yeah, I remember you in fact, when it was a lot higher, Alan Green alerted me to this company and I didn't pay any attention because the share price was a lot higher. And then you, months later, you said, look at this. These guys, the directors, are putting a big chunk of money here. And I said, look at the management. So I had a read-through. I liked it a lot. And in fact, I bought some and wrote a blog article on it. In fact, I was just talking about them yesterday on the chart with Zach. And I was saying, have a look at this. And I was mentioning that basically they are ASOS of India. And of course, ASOS is the most successful company of AIM. And even if you look at the website, not only the management, the website itself, you could just remove the Coovs name and put ASOS on there. So I was saying, if ASOS wanted, or ASOS, if they wanted a presence in India, they could just buy Coovs, couldn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. It's got all of the hallmarks of a company that could do particularly well. We know from some experience in the markets that these businesses that have got these kind of ideas are going into retail and venturing into these kind of spaces. They need heavy promotion and marketing, and that's where a lot of the money gets eaten up. If it becomes a situation where it's a household name and these brands go viral, then you're never going to have a problem trying to find buyers. And that's ultimately what ASOS have been able to do. And we've seen it with other companies that are in the food sector, like Ocado. They did the same thing and they've gone on and accelerated in growth at a hell of a rate. So Coovs got all the hallmarks of a small baby infantile version, but let's see whether they can go all the way.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is, what I like about Coovs though is that they are like Indian based, and they're saying that the take up of people shopping online in India is huge, and as you know, the second biggest population in the world, and so you've got 1.3 billion people there. And I think it's they've got a younger growing population as well, who are more, used to buying stuff online. So I just think it's a very exciting space to be in. Anyway, Doc, any other stocks you've been looking at, taking your fancy?
Oh, mate, I mean, there's loads of different things that are taking my fancy. I did kind of look at my charting software a couple of days ago, which isn't something I've been doing a great deal of recently. Everything just kind of felt a bit toppy and nothing was kind of jumping out at me. And then we've obviously seen yesterday with the last day of the kind of financial trading year, or whatever you want to refer to it as, where people can put their ISA allocation in or realize some losses to perhaps help cover some of the tax that they're going to end up paying in the new tax year. So there's a lot of people that start shuffling the cards around a little bit just to try and suit themselves and suit their own kind of business moving forward. I don't know, it's a tough one to say. where the next big moves are going to come from. We've seen a colossal rise with 88 Energy, Metal Tiger. We've seen it with Ascent Resources. I go back and look at companies like UCOG that we talked a lot about. They did a massive rise. African Potash did it. Optibiotics did it. You know, there's a whole bunch of these companies that have all had a really, really big kind of shake and move in the market over the last year or two. And it's trying to see where the next ones are going to come from. There's a lot of people now commenting that, you know, the resource space has hit the bottom and we're seeing a full reversal. I don't quite buy that. I don't buy it because I think when we get to the end of these tax years, we start to see lots of things affected. When we see these bearish runs in the market, everything gets affected. If we were running into a genuine bullish reversal in the natural resource sector, we wouldn't just be seeing isolated cases of companies going up by 100%, 300% or 500%. We would start to see the whole kind of bottom start to lift. And ultimately, you would expect the ones that are fundamentally the strongest or those that have got the best kind of assets in place would realize some of those gains quicker than others. But that doesn't seem to be the case either. We're seeing some kind of insane valuations. We're seeing momentum driving most of the rises in the market at the minute. And as I say, it seems like it's a rinse and repeat situation where it goes from one to another, then another. And that generally doesn't support the argument that we're seeing a complete reversal in the junior sector, junior resource sector. That's not to say that we're not going to go on to see one. I just don't buy right into that just yet. I think we've had a pretty stinking 12 months overall. There's a lot of fear of Brexit. The situation, around the world is hardly a peaceful kind of environment right now. And there just seems to be so many different things that could just creep up and bite us as investors on the bottom. I think there's a hell of a lot of risk in the market, and on that basis, I'm still pretty much in a cash position right now.
Yeah, well, it's interesting to say that, because part of me thinks, a big part of me thinks that this bounce we're seeing or have seen is pretty much from a bounce from an oversold level, you know, and so we've had a technical bounce. And I don't think there's a fundamental bounce here, because if you look around the world, like I said, you are getting the bodies like the IMF downgrading global growth for next year and next 2 years. And China, the worry about China, where we know half of the world's commodities are swallowed up there. So, yeah, it's quite easy. I think, definitely a strong case for saying it's just a technical bounce, really, isn't it? But are there any stocks that you're sort of bullish on?
Yeah, look, you know, the situation in the markets is there'll always be opportunities, and there'll always be, you know, the companies that will be moving in the markets based on momentum, news flow, one thing and another. As I say, we've seen a lot of good examples of that. Arion Resources, or Arion Silver rather, AGQ is a company that I touch quite a lot about. We know that Jim Williams didn't attend the momentous event. He sent one of his colleagues along as he was out in country, out in Mexico. There's strong rumours that deal's going to get signed up. There's no reason why it won't. And if he comes home and brings the bacon home, you look at the free float, you look at the market cap of that company, and you look at the fact that they've got a proven track record of being able to get, operate a commercial mine, even if the longevity of it didn't quite come to pass. With a tiny market cap, 1.5-2 million quid, it's got to have legs, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, definitely, yeah. I mean, I'm not in, but it's on my watch list there. Anything else?
You look at I see a lot of people commenting on Horse Hill at the minute, saying, things perhaps aren't going to work out. There's demonstrators and protesters on site. I think the one thing we know is it was dressed up a bit too much. Initially, they've gone away and they've had a lot of professional reports carried out by Schlumberger and a whole bunch of other different parties. It's starting to gain a bit of credibility on the basis of these reports, if you accept that these reports have been paid for by the people who are operating the asset. But there's no better group out there than to start talking their own book, and I think the likes of Horse Hill, UCOG, Regency, Alba, all of these kind of stocks, they've all gone off and raised some cash on the last piece of news There's, you know, an eagerly anticipated next kind of announcement from their assets. You know, they've talked a lot about the Kimmeridgian clay. They're now going to start talking more about the Portland and basically the resource overall and in general. So I think that kind of group have got the possibility to really move things on. Chris Cleverley's a great kind of front man for companies. He's done a sterling job so far with African Potash, but you know, he's got to deliver. The market again anticipates that. I've noticed that the chatter's really died down on African Potash at the minute. I think people have gone from feeling excited to feeling a little exasperated. I think they need to now look to the chief of staff and see, you know, that he's going to deliver them with what they expect or a bit more. I've got no reason to believe that he won't do it. He's obviously working quite tirelessly and hard on that. So, you know, there's a bunch of companies out there that are going to present opportunities. What we need to be able to identify is whether the market as a whole is starting to become more buoyant. And if it's not, it's just a case that there's a lot of cash now sloshing about in the junior markets because of companies like 88 Energy, Asia Met. I know you spoke to Tony, or you'll be speaking to Tony. And obviously, Metal Tiger, there's an argument that there's a lot more money sloshing about, and that's going to present more liquidity in companies. But unless these people gravitate to the same place, it eventually will start to dry up. And we're just at that time of year, go away in May, come back St. Ledger's Day. You know, we're at that point in time, and I'm not convinced that this is the market becoming uber buoyant. I actually think it's the market's just doing what it does naturally, and we're seeing a bit of a bounce, as you want to call it, or just a bit of activity from the market's participants and makers in order to try and get things, you know, pushed along a little bit naturally. The city's gonna turn a buck. And there seems to be no better time than today or now to be doing that.
Okay, one last question then. What's the last stock? I find this hard, actually. I'm trying to think of the last stock I bought. But I did top up on Asia Met. But the last stock you bought?
The last one I bought. I bought some Vast. A couple of, I think it was about 2 weeks ago. I was in and out for a trade. I mentioned that the first half of the position, you know, cut a pretty decent amount. The second half, I kind of cut. I think you and I had spoke about it. There wasn't a lot of return in the second half. In fact, it was quite flat. Didn't quite work out. Shares come off quite hard, and then I posted out or put it on in my Instagram account a position that I bought into Vast at spot 19.9 and spot 21.4 or 21.8. I put that contract note out, a copy of the two receipts, and that's gone on and done quite well. I have had a couple of trades on that as well, and that, you know, it's done well. The story with Vast, unfortunately, is whilst they've announced that the Creed drawdown or conversion won't take place because of the pricing, you know, the price shot up dramatically today, and that now will perhaps present them enough headroom to be able to convert. When that happens, the stock's going to come off hard again. So I think the longer that they can prevent Creed pulling the trigger, the better it'll be for VAST or Vast. But for me, you know, there's a lot of risk attached to that, so you've got to be banking those gains as quickly as possible. So Vast was probably one that I've done a fair bit of trading in and out of. I did buy Ascent Resources the other day just on the basis that it looked like it was going to turn, kind of got to 2p, and then it just you know, hit a plateau, and it seems to have had the rug pulled on it over the last couple of days. Again, that was a simple buy based on market mechanics, that there's a lot of money trapped higher up and people would be tempted to start scaling in. Didn't quite go to plan. What you've got to do is you've got to say, it's not worked out. You've got to be prepared to make that cut and move, because with these kind of companies, when they've had a massive rise, you don't want to be the one that starts to fall in love with something, particularly when it's been well ridden.
No, two good examples there of it's a trader's game, those two at the moment, and I can't trade that fast in and out, you know.
Justin, before companies on a fundamental basis, what people have got to remember is I was talking about UCOG, I was talking about African Potash 6 months before these gains, and I was holding, you know, for well over that period of time because I was confident what would happen. So I just want people to understand that. I'm not just out there looking for a scalp or a short-term kind of turnaround. It's simply the market as it is today is forcing people into that position. It, you know, there is, I agree, an argument that people should back companies they believe in and support them for the long term if that's what they believe. I obviously can't possibly do that when you look at the, you know, the greater, the macro picture, which for me just isn't suggesting that that's the way to play it. But that's not to say that that's not something that I don't do. I just wanted to clear that point up for anybody out there who just thinks it's about, you know, kind of jumping in and out of these companies. It really isn't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Marvellous, Doc. Lovely to speak to you. Speak soon, fella.
Cheers. Thanks, Justin.
Okay, today's stock with potential, as submitted by Avzal, is Alexander Mining, ticker AXM. What does the company do? It's an AIM-listed mining and mineral processing technology company. It partnerships in producing mines and the acquisition of equity positions in advanced projects. These technologies have the potential to revolutionise the extraction process for many base metal deposits by reducing costs and hence enhancing operating margins at the mine site. It has 362 million shares in issue. Market cap is 650,000. That's all. 0.18 pence is the price. Has no debt. Three reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, 39 patents granted. Patents in the countries with the most prospective geology for hosting high acid consuming metals. Patents include Zambia, Zimbabwe, Botswana, Tanzania, Mozambique, Morocco, Peru, South Africa, USA, Mexico, Australia, Congo, and many more. Wow. Point number two, potential licensing and royalties. Several multinational major intermediate and junior companies have assessed and are assessing the company's leaching technology, principally for copper versus copper cobalt and zinc, although test work and commercial discussions relating to these companies are subject to confidentiality agreements. They include companies which have significant interest in the African copper belt, that's Zambia and the DRC, Southern Africa, Australia, South America and North America. Industry recognition of the major commercial value of the technology has been shown by one company making an indicative non-binding proposal to purchase the company's AmLeach technology on an outright basis for its global operations. And reason three, the company is waiting to continue discussions with Compass Resources regarding the use of its technology at the Brown's Oxide Copper Cobalt Mine. Alexander has also identified several attractive copper and zinc opportunities in Australia, and the company is in discussions with another mining company about a possible partnership to investigate these and other opportunities. Alexander has been discussing opportunities for his AmLeach technology in this region with a North American group and good connections in Mexico. A significant number of potential opportunities have been identified, especially for zinc oxide exploitation, and the company looks forward to progressing discussions with further definitive license agreements for the Sivas copper mineral property in Turkey. So that is Alexandra Mining, AXM. Please do your own research. But they have patents in, 39 countries? It's phenomenal. Or 39 patents granted in lots of countries. So check that out. AXM is a ticker. And this podcast is dedicated to New Watchukunjine. That's the username on iTunes, by the way. It's given me a 5-star rating, and this is the review. This podcast is now top of my daily podcast list, and considering I'm a football fanatic, that is always the one I listen to every day without fail, and that's saying something. Thanks very much. That is nice. If you are a football fanatic, and this, you know, takes a position above the football podcast, I'm impressed with that. Thank you very much. I'm glad it offers you some value. It goes on, for any newbie to stocks and shares, this is an absolute must. It's taught me so much, and it's such an easy listen and full of humour. Yeah, really? Are you sure you got the right podcast? Anyway, thank you very much for that. That's taken my ratings up to 127 five-star ratings. I'm trying to get in the top 10 for podcast investing worldwide. I'm in the top 14. There's 2,000 most, what's it called? What's Hot section on the investing podcast chart on iTunes. I'm in the top 14. I want to get in the top 10. So if you get any value from this podcast, please click the link at voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. and just click the link there in the way iTunes link, write a little review, give me a 5-star rating there, and I'll read it out. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waits.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.